M on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Mary Weaver Chapin, the curator of graphic arts at the Portland Art Museum, about David Hockney's 16 etchings called A Rake's Progress. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can be one. Just go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today to start the process.
And now stay tuned for an interview with one of the organizers of last week's peace rally for Yemen. Good night, Ken.
Good night, Eric. Good night, Mike.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Portland was one of hundreds of cities around the world that hosted a peace rally for Yemen this past Saturday, June 13th. The International Day of Action was called in response to Yemeni civilians' demands for immediate ceasefire and lifting of the Saudi blockade. The blockade is intended to prevent the rebels from provisioning, but meanwhile, it has cut off Yemeni civilians from essential food and fuel imports. In addition, Saudi airstrikes and local ground fighting have taken more than 2,000 Yemeni lives. KBOO's Sarah Swetsoff spoke with one of the organizers of last week's rally.
I'm here with Maha Al-Yusufi, a graduate student in the Conflict Resolution Program at Portland State University. This past weekend, Maha was the press contact for a rally for peace in Yemen, where a small, passionate group of Portland residents came together to ask for a ceasefire and an immediate lifting of the blockade on Yemen. Maha, I was wondering if you could start out by giving some more information about yourself and your background and maybe narrating the experience of the average Yemeni. What does this conflict and violence look like from the perspective of the average person on the ground over these past 3 months now?
Thank you for having me. My name is Maha Al-Yusufi, and I was born and raised in Yemen. I am right now a conflict resolution student. I grew up in Yemen, in different areas of Yemen. I grew up in Sana'a and Taiz and Hudaida, and these areas have been bombarded by the Saudi coalition for reasons to stop the Houthi advance to control Yemen's capital, Sana'a, and also the other capital called Aden, and it's the main port in Yemen. The Yemeni people were surprised on March 26 at 2 a.m. without any notice or call for taking safe haven by bombardment by the Saudi coalition, striking over 50 strikes on the first day. People were frightened. They did not know what's happening, and everyone thought they are on the edge of death. After the bombardment continued, they also continued to block the ports from air and land and also sea. Yemen imports 90% of its food, and that includes flour, sugar, oil, and other basic necessities, as well as medicine and fuel. Right now, Yemen has not been allowed to have any food enter to Yemen, and there's very few aids that have been arrived by the UN and also Doctors Without Borders, as well as the Red Cross. Yemeni people are struggling to live and make ends meet. They don't have jobs anymore. They don't have salaries. All the prices of fuel and food necessities has been skyrocketing. People are dependent on aid. There's actually 20 million people in Yemen are in need of humanitarian assistance. 12.5 million people are in need of food, and 1 million is internally displaced in Yemen. Also, 15 million Yemeni lack access to basic health care. Yemeni people are asking for immediate ceasefire, and they would like to seek and solve that political solution through dialogue and conversation instead of bombing and fighting on the ground.
In terms of social media, for example, Twitter, Yemenis posting online, the media coverage in the Arab world, what are people saying there? What does that conversation look like in Arabic that we might not hear just depending on the scant coverage in Western media?
There's a lot of activists, especially on Twitter, they are calling for ceasefire, they're calling for rallies, they're calling to tweet, to bring attention to what's happening in Yemen. There's also today, there is a call by Exxon Middle East to fast for 12 hours in solidarity with the 12 million Yemenis are food insecure, and post it to their website to show that outside the world is also showing support and solidarity with the Yemeni inside. However, there hasn't been any coverage of Yemeni struggle. There has been coverage of the fighting and who's Houthi and who's backing them, and also the exiled government of Yemen that is now in Riyadh, and it's leaded by the Prime Minister Baha as well as the former President Abdurrabbo Mansour Hadi.
Can you give a little bit more background about, for example, the Yemeni uprisings a few years ago in the context of the Arab Spring, and what kind of political changes happened between then and now that set the stage for the current events?
Yes, in 2011, Yemeni people went to the street peacefully. They left their weapons at home and they came all under one umbrella of ousting the former president of Yemen, Ali Abdullah Saleh. The GCC countries, and that includes Saudi Arabia and all the other Gulf countries, Qatar, Kuwait, Bahrain, Oman, have came and helped Yemen, like prominent people in Yemen and leaders of civil societies and revolution parties, to talk, and they came up with agreement to topple the president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, however, with certain restrictions, where Abdullah Saleh, the former president, have to stay in Yemen. He will not be prosecuted, neither him or his family, for any crimes or any corruption. And also for his vice president, Abdurrabbo Mansour Hadi, to be in power for 2 years. And after that, he will call for election for free and democratic election. However, the President Abdurrabbo Mansour Hadi, his term ended in February of 2014, and he has not called for an election. And that was one of the reasons the Houthi rebels advanced to Sana'a to protest his illegitimate control of the government.
That brought up the question for me. Many people aren't familiar with some of the internal divisions in Yemen, not necessarily divisions, but this historical situation that part of Yemen became a protectorate or a mandate of the British, and the other part remained independent. And so there's this perhaps ongoing divide between North and South that I actually know very little about myself. I was wondering if explaining any of that would be relevant to understanding the current situation?
Definitely, definitely. So during the Arab Revolution in Yemen, there is a separatist group in the southern part of Yemen, and that is like the capital of Aden, is the capital of the southern part of Yemen, have called for secession and independence from the north for many reasons, and one of it for the corruption of the government that was in Sana'a and controlled all the resources and did not divide them and share them equally, and they wanted independence from that government. However, they did not get their call because every party, including also the other regional actors, refused to allow them to break from Yemen for many reasons, and one of them is it's beneficial for both Yemen to stay united. As of now, the people in Aden and the Houthi rebels are fighting, and I would say they're called, the people in Aden who is fighting the Houthis are called the popular resistance. However, a big group of them are from the separatist movement who really are calling for the separation of southern Yemen and going back to the Republic of Yemen in 1990.
Another misconception that appears in mainstream media is casting the conflict as Sunni versus Shia in these favored sectarian, the sectarian binary that both Western media and sometimes Arab media like to tap into. Could you explain those misconceptions?
Definitely. And the Houthis are from northern Yemen, and a lot of people from top northern Yemen tend to belong to the Zaydi religion. It's like a branch of Islam, and it's really closest to the Sunni more than the Shia that is we understand in the Western media, like in Iraq or in Iran or in Lebanon. And this description of it's a Houthi, it's Sunni, and it's a Shia is really misunderstanding the actual cause of the conflict, because the conflict is not religious or sectarian. The conflict is actually for political control of the Yemeni government. The Houthis want to be part of the government, but now they are advancing to want to be the actual government of Yemen. People in Yemen does not have the divide. Like, Houthi is now not part of Yemen. They're all part of Yemen. However, the actual divide is between the south and the north. That is more prominent. I would describe the conflict in Yemen more than it is a religious conflict.
So some people have also described the ways in which both Saudi Arabia and Iran are exploiting these tensions in Yemen to advance their own regional interests. We know that Saudi Arabia and Iran have had this tense relationship, as they're both two of the strongest countries in the region, and some have even described it as a proxy war.
I would have heard is there's a lot of talk that Houthis are backed by Iran, and the other government, who is led by the exiled president Abdurrabbu Mansur Hadi, are backed by Saudi Arabia. And there is that feeling that it is a proxy war in Yemen. However, I do feel that Saudi is actually showing its muscles and showing Iran its weapon and military capability, and that is shown in this attack on Yemen.
And we know that Saudi Arabia is the biggest weapons customer of the United States in the world at the moment. So a lot of these weapons are U.S. manufactured. Has anybody done a detailed survey of what weapons and bombs are being used and their origin?
Well, Human Rights Watch have accused Saudi Arabia of using cluster bombs made by the United States. I'm not really familiar with the other names of the military capability they've been using, but Saudi Arabia have purchased over $60 billion worth of weapons from the United States just this year. And they have been using weapons that is outlawed for many, many years on civilian areas. They've used like bombs and rockets and airstrikes. I apologize, I don't have the actual name of these weapons. However, they are very strong weapons. People in Yemen tell me that when these weapons hit, it's like a constant earthquake, and it feels like the heat from these weapons feels like they opened the gate to hell.
It's really scary and very tragic. What would you ask the average listener? How would you ask them to follow up? What media source could they follow for more information? Or how could they add their voice to all of the international voices asking for peace and ceasefire and a diplomatic resolution to the conflict?
I would say there's many outlets that is outside of the United States, like Reuters, BBC, Al Jazeera. Those tend to focus more on Middle Eastern conflict and have details and have closer journalists closer to the area of Yemen, because there is no outside foreign journalists in Yemen at the moment. I'm hoping we could write a letter, and I will post it on my social media and my Twitter to sign to ask our senators to put pressure on the United States and the UN to ask for a permanent ceasefire in Yemen and find a peaceful solution as well. There is also Twitter is really the most information I get, and it's really updated by a lot of activists. And also I follow NGOs that is working in Yemen, and usually that's the Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders and also Oxfam.
And there's upcoming UN talks as well. That was some of the focus of for example, why the timing of the rally, which coincided with an International Day of Action, that date was selected because of upcoming UN talks?
Yes, there is. Right, actually, the UN talk started today, and Ban Ki-moon opened the UN talk asking for 2 months of ceasefire, because also the holy month of Ramadan starts in 3 days. And he wanted to express that the 2 months would give people enough time to get food and aid into Yemen, and also have enough time for all the delegates to actually talk and find a peaceful resolution. The rally was actually called by activists inside and outside of Yemen, asking the UN to demand ceasefire, and a permanent one, hopefully in the near future, and allow the Yemeni people to actually live in peace and allow them to get all the supplies and all the medical and allow the children to go back to school and go back to a normal living. Right now, there is more than 1.8 million children out of school, and they all are terrified and frightened. And we are hoping that the peace talk that started today would actually solve the problem or even start putting all these parties that are actually fighting on the ground to separate themselves from the fighting and start talking and understanding what it would take to find a solution for Yemen.
Yes, we hope that they find a solution as soon as possible, and especially, as you mentioned, the holy month of fasting will start this Thursday, a time when people usually catch up with family and concentrate their efforts on building community and being there for the people around them.
And in Islam, is actually, there's 2 months prior to Ramadan and Ramadan, which is like forbidden to fight. This is when you have to take ceasefire because it's forbidden in the religion to be fighting any kind of people, Muslim or non-Muslim.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Maha. And I've certainly learned a huge amount talking to you, and I hope listeners benefit from this rare glimpse into what's happening in Yemen from someone who has that experience and family and network on the ground there.
Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate your time. And I hope peace and ceasefire comes as a resolution to Yemen very shortly.
Attention KABU members and listeners. The KABU Foundation is seeking to fill 4 upcoming vacancies on the board of directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KABU website, and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kabucommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete forms will not be considered as fulfilling the statement of interest requirement by the KABU bylaws. Packets are due by Saturday, July 11th.